Time now for the Yahoo Sports College Podcast with Dan Wetzel.
But we really like being mean.
Yes.
Pete Thamel.
No matter how much we kick and scream about the four-team playoff now, it was so much worse.
And SI's Pat Forty.
The number one choice is as big a no-brainer as Trevor Lawrence. I mean, this is obvious.
Here's Pat, Pete, and Dan.
Ah, welcome to the pod. Hey, glad we did our Super League selections on Monday, because it was one of only 3 days that the Super League was alive.
Great run.
The XFL looks like the Kentucky Derby with this thing. Like, you know, timeless.
Longevity.
Soccer. Did the NCAA run this rollout of the Super League, the European Soccer League, that took 48 hours and the fans were protesting? The soccernistas were up in arms. They won. Congratulations. Power to the people.
Manchester have won.
Man City.
They listen to them. All the annoying people that you identified, Dan, like rioting with like torches and pitchforks outside the office of some mythical Super League club, which probably looks like a Crystal Palace, even though Crystal Palace wasn't involved. And I feel like they won.
Torches, yeah. Pitchforks.
They had their Shiano Sunday, Sully. Yeah. You said it well.
Torches, pitchforks, and scarves. Got to have the team scarves.
A lot of scarf. Got to have the scarf.
All right. Well, you know, so this is interesting. In the time that the Super League lived, of course, there were many people went with what we did and created our own college football Super League. I heard supposed reports that this was even possible, that the colleges might actually do this. Completely ridiculous. But we do always hear the puff out of some athletic director somewhere or some commissioner about breaking free of the NCAA and having a Power Five sort of Super League with just 60-something teams. That part I also think is impossible, but I'm open to debate on this subject. Do either of you think there is anything to, I think we can take the 12-team Super League pretty much out of contention, but if not, maybe we can discuss that too. This idea that there's a big breakaway really possible for college athletics.
I still think it is very much unlikely, but perhaps less unlikely now than it has been in years past. You know, I do know in the fall, really it was late summer, there were discussions and conversations amongst the Power Five about staging their own fall championships. You know, if the NCAA isn't going to have them, we'll have them because we want to have them, and who needs the NCAA? You know, we'll run our own stuff. And it was even, you know, it wasn't terribly concrete, but it did get to the point, you know, detail of like, okay, which conference is going to host which sports and where would they host them? And can you call a member school and say, hey, will you host the cross-country championships or whatever? So, you know, that was spurred by COVID, but I think it also has the underpinning of general dissatisfaction with being partners with the non-Power Five and with an NCAA structure that tells the Power Five still more what to do than it wants to be told what to do. I think overall that there's a recognition that there will be a lot of bad that would come with that, a lot of problems, a lot of complications. I do think you would stand a great chance of completely killing the college basketball tournament golden goose. And I think you would alienate a lot of programs and schools that you would find out you still ultimately need for scheduling and other purposes. So, you know, I don't think it would happen, but I do think as the dissatisfaction has grown with NCAA leadership, that there's probably more of an appetite to look and say, hey, is there a way we can do this?
The last time this idea was broached to me was, again, theoretically, not in any sort of like significant momentum way, was a few weeks ago at the NCAA tournament when the Georgetown president, Jack DeGioia, came out in support of Mark Emmert. And no one in college athletics is in support of Mark Emmert. No commissioners, no athletic directors, other than maybe Scott Woodward, who he's related to. And they really thought the presidential leadership piece that, again, is sort of slogging through this time where the NCAA hasn't got anything done with name, image, and likeness, keeps stepping on its own feet. They really thought that that may be one of the drivers to eventually force some kind of breakaway. Basically, if the actual experts and people involved in the sports aren't in charge of the sports, which is patently ridiculous that it is that way right now. I mean, it's a bunch of people who spend 5% of their time in college athletics making the decisions that shape most of college athletics, which doesn't make a ton of sense. But my skepticism is and always has been rooted in the logistics, right? The NCAA is this big, awful monolith. Well, actually, like 90% of those people are making the trains run on time. Their eligibility, their enforcement, their compliance. The NCAA is generally filled with well-meaning people trying to do their best and work in college sports. And you can't just, how many people work there? What's your estimate? 500?
I'm sure at least.
So these hundreds of people aren't just there to like hold up the barricade from athletes getting paid, which I think is like the perception sometimes. These 500 people all have jobs. They're making their widgets. They're, you know, making sure the trains run on time. They are all like all of that, all of those man hours, many of those man hours would have to be replaced in some way. So you would still need some sort of centralized governance if you did break away. And so like the infrastructure piece of it is one reason I've been skeptical. And then the second one obviously comes down to the basketball tournament, like Pat just said. Can you break away from that $1 billion CBS deal? Can you then recreate something, call it something else, and make it like the NCAA tournament with a bracket again, but still have North Texas and still have, you know, these great underdog stories like, you know, plucky 11 seed UCLA coming out of nowhere? You know, can you still have VCU and Butler and all these great, you know, great runs we've seen over the years, George Mason? Like, is that gone if they break away? I would be much less interested in the NCAA tournament if it was just Providence playing Oregon State in an 8-9 game. Like, that doesn't do much for me and never will. And so I do think that is going to give pause. And then the other piece why I think there's zero chance this happens is the same reason why in realignment, Texas Tech was going to have to go with Texas and Oklahoma State was going to have to go with Oklahoma. The politicians are going to get involved. And when the politicians get involved, there's just no chance that this happens because there's too many state institutions. There's too much tied in a general economic sense. So you're talking about multi-billion-dollar industry. There's too much tied in economic sense to allow them to go away and just create their own little kingdom.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I remain. This is just like it's like a cocktail party thing for cocktail discussion of athletic directors. Like, well, we'll just do it on our own. Go ahead. I dare you. It's sort of like the Super League. Go ahead, try it. See what happens. And those are billion-dollar corporations. Everything they got clued in on. The number one thing is the politics to me. Pete pointed it out. 2010, the Pac-12 wanted Oklahoma and they wanted Texas. And without even getting past the initial stages, Texas and Oklahoma said, we can't go without Oklahoma State and Texas Tech. Because if we leave two public institutions in our state behind in a devalued Big 12, the amount of money we will make is offset by the money those schools will lose, and the state legislatures will flip out. And that would be the same thing. I would say this, of all the schools in the country, the Power Five that have maybe not all, but one of the ones that has the most power in its state is Ohio State. Obviously, Nebraska or some of these stick schools where there really aren't any other schools. But Ohio State, big time deal. It's the only Power Five team in the state of Ohio. It's a big, big deal. But if it left the NCAA, there's all the other Division I schools are left behind in a completely devalued whatever the hell's left. Cincinnati, Dayton. Just do the public ones. Cincinnati, Akron, Toledo's not, Bowling Green, Ohio, Cleveland State, Kent, right? Then your private ones that have political power too. Dayton is big in Dayton, right? Wright State. You go down to your D3s, would be completely, everything would be a mess. All of those politicians, unless this became some kind of partisan thing, would say, wait a minute, you're not screwing us over here in Bowling Green. I can't let Bowling Green get hurt because of you if I represent that area. And so as big as, like, let me put this with Ohio State. Ohio State is the, I think, the biggest athletic department in the country. It has about a $200 million operating budget and brings in about $200 million in revenue. That's a lot of money. That's huge. The operating budget for the entire Ohio State University is $7.5
billion. Yeah, slightly larger.
Even if you took the hospital out, it's over $4 billion to run Ohio State. Ohio State football is a big deal. Not that big of a deal. They get a half a billion from the state. You want to risk that half billion? Is there going to be a TV contract that's going to make up for the half billion plus all the other contracts with the state, all the other things? Do you give up your research grants with the other Big Ten schools or the other schools in the state? Do you risk, you know, whatever you're doing, politicians are going to jump in. And so I just don't see, and that's at Ohio State. Imagine the others. That's why the Super League, forget it. Oh, really? The politicians of Florida are going to let Florida just leave Florida State and everyone else behind? Hell no. So I just, to me, it's just complete. It's as big as college football is. It isn't that big compared to these schools.
Right. No, the level of complication that goes so far above and beyond athletics is something that often just gets completely ignored. But yeah, there's bigger money and there's more people involved and more decision makers and influencers involved when you get outside of that. I'm reading a book right now on like how World War One started and like the lattice work of alliances and agreements and stuff. And that's kind of what you're talking about there is like you want to go in and start breaking those treaties? Well, welcome to war. I think that there's a lot more chance to lose than there is to win from that sort of situation. And, you know, that's the other thing to Pete's point, that somebody has to run an organization. You know, if you can get rid of, you can walk away from the NCAA, but you have to create son of NCAA, you know, over here to make sure eligibility standards are there and look at transcripts. And, you know, if you're going to leave this to each individual school, that's not going to work. There has to be an overseeing body that takes care of all that stuff. Who wants to sign up for that? Creating NCAA Junior.
Running the cross-country championships. Yeah. And plotting them out 4 years in advance so you know you've got the park in wherever to, you know, like, these are jobs. Someone's got to do that job.
Yeah, I'll make the final point of this. We have a couple of college presidents who listen to this podcast, and they tend to tweak me on text message when I bring up the point that college presidents are generally gutless, and they are generally
name
gutless.
Name drop.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm not name dropping. I'm calling them gutless. I don't think I'm actually promoting it. But college presidents have no vision. They have no collaboration, and they have no ability to make decisions when it comes to college athletics. We've seen this for a generation now, and this would take like bold leadership. It would take people like putting their jobs on the line. It would take actual expertise. College presidents have none of this when it comes to college sports. They just want to keep cashing the checks. Let the corpse of Mark Emmert up to take the bullets for him and then just like keep on keeping on.
I would add this too, and because you also the politicians would be federal. You would have people saying you're gonna have to pay taxes now. There'd be a whole bunch of political fight. But I also say this, I don't know that you don't lose money anyway, even if your TV money goes up. If you have an even league, like the NFL, you play in, well, now we got an uneven schedule at the NFL. It's called 17, but they work it out. Let's say in the past, you have an equal number of home and road games. You no longer get 8 home games. You get 6.
Right.
That's a big loss in revenue for these schools. Tickets, it devalues the parking permits. It hurts the importance of donations. It hurts the towns.
Sure.
These towns thrive on 8 home games. They don't get TV money. They get the 8 home games. B, you got to win. The reason people donate and support your team is if you are winning. You need those easier games against the non-power five to burst up records. The NFL, you could go 1-15 in Jacksonville, and guess what you see? No one goes to the games. Not just last year because of COVID, but in general. The attendance drops. But the system is we have a salary cap and the worst team gets the best player. So Jacksonville gets Trevor Lawrence. And if you're a Jaguar fan, you sit through and go, well, this sucks, but I'm going to get Trevor Lawrence. And now I buy my ticket again. In recruiting, the best team gets the best player and the worst team gets the worst player. And so if you suck, you're always going to suck. That climb out is impossible. So you're going to go year after year after year, one in 12 or whatever, 1 in 11. Like, how's that working? That's going to cost you. I don't care how much TV money you supposedly get. And then the basketball tournament be a joke. People do not watch the NCAA basketball tournament because of great basketball. If you wanted to watch great basketball, you'd watch the NBA. You watch because of the upsets and the drama, and Abilene Christian provides an incredible value to that event. Even, you know, that's what it's about. That it's three different events. It's the first two rounds are a huge event. The middle sorts it out, and then the finals people watch. But it's three different events practically. You can't get rid of Abilene Christian and expect people to just tune in and get excited because Missouri's playing Auburn in the first round. Nobody watches that game in the regular season.
No. Great point Pete had on Monday was, at, you know, you think Phil Knight's going to let Oregon out of the, you know, not participate? Everybody's got a Phil Knight, not necessarily to that level, but you brought that point up too, Dan. Like, Michigan State's got two giant dudes that would not allow Michigan State to, you know, they know people. They would strong arm their way into it. And everybody's got one of those guys.
Yeah, I mean, it would be.
And Sully, your guy runs convenience stores and NFL franchises into the ground, right?
Yeah. Oh, your guy is not good. Pilot. Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, your guy. We got
Gatorade money. We got Pepsi money. We got some money in Knoxville. Don't worry.
Missouri had a guy once, and he put his daughter's name on the arena, and then there was plagiarism, and they had to take the name off, and now he's not really Missouri's guy anymore. But
and the other guy was behind the Super League. Right.
Yeah. So no, that's the point is that a lot of if you either had just a Power Five or a Super League, is that teams that are accustomed to winning would have to become accustomed to losing, and that would not go well. And you're asking them to take on the risk of going from being a perennial 9-3 to a perennial 4-8. And who wants to sign up for that risk when you already get the chance to, you know, especially if you're in the SEC and you get four non-conference home games that you can win, or four non-conference games that you can win, or the ACC the same way. And then you go to a bowl and you puff yourself up and everybody's excited about your team. And a lot of the fans all say, oh, we don't really like those boring games when we're winning 55-8. They actually kind of do, because they get excited about their team. You go and you see your guys play well and dominate another team, and you walk out saying, we're pretty good. And you build up some excitement about your season through the first 3 or 4 weeks of the season. And then reality arrives, but you've at least got that much.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to sell tickets when you're 7-5 and you went to a bowl or six. That's why they do it. Than if you're Michigan last year, go 2-4. And you know, extrapolate that out, and you're 4-8 for the season. Now you try sell it. Now, if you have your easier games and all of that, at least you have something. So I think it's something they love talking about. I think they'll always love talking about. If they dare try it, man, let the Super League. They didn't even see 50 of the problems coming on that. Let me put it this way. These are just the things I can think up.
Right. Yeah.
There's probably 100 more problems coming at you. Like, man, good luck trying. All right, so on Monday, we drafted the 12 schools that we would put in our Super League. And unlike some of these other wimpy national writers, like Andy Staples, Ralph Russo, they went 15. Yeah, well, that's easy. 12 is what the Super League has in Europe. We want 12. That's why Oklahoma gets left out. You go, what? How the hell did this happen? It's hard.
Yeah, we want people angry. That's the difference. Other podcasts want to be, like, friendly to people. No, we want people irate. We want people, you know, like, burning up our comment section.
Yeah.
We don't want any friends here.
We had one guy saying that it was proof. The podcast was proof that we know nothing about college football. So that's good.
Yeah. I mean, we'd like to think twice a week we show everybody that.
So. Yeah, I'm not sure what we dispute. I mean, yeah, when you got to choose between Michigan, Oklahoma, and Texas A&M, yeah, that's a hard pick.
Yeah.
You know, you get two of the three. All right.
Yeah.
All right, so. But we really like being mean. That's
yes.
At one point, we were going to rebrand this podcast just mean. That was going to be the name of the podcast. We literally have a segment that makes us say something nice. So we want to pick the least Super League, the 12 programs you would start if you were trying to put together the worst FBS league possible. This would elicit nothing but whatever, like, What was that? Fox Sports South Plus? That'd be the only place you'd see the games.
Tarleton was on there, I believe.
We would get no television money, have no fans, and no recruiting base. So, in the spirit of being mean and capturing the huge markets that these fan bases have, let's do a draft. We're going to select. So select your number one, the worst possible franchise in college sports to start your bottom 12. You know, Ryan McGee at ESPN does the bottom 10. 12, yeah. Bottom 10 every week. Yeah. That's always pretty funny.
With the number one choice is as big a no-brainer as Trevor Lawrence. I mean, this is obvious. This is a layup. And by the way, layups are the only thing they do well at this school when it comes to athletics. It's Kansas. As I said in the column, without redeeming value or hope. I mean, they have tried everything since Mark Mangino was forced out, and they have stunk. They have been not just bad, but terrible. For a long time. They haven't had a winning season since 2008. They haven't won more than three games since 2009. Every hire they make is a disaster. They are currently still flailing around after Les Miles. We'll see where they point their rudderless ship next. And they are the biggest underachiever, non-entity hanger-on in Power 5 football.
Oh, so this has to be Power 5. We're not getting down to
I did Power 5. Okay. Now, yeah, last summer
that's
I
good. That's good.
We're going to spare you, Matt.
Last summer
I thought UMass
was relegated a long time ago. So.
We can't even be the number one pick of the worst. That's how much we suck. All right, second pick, Pete.
So, Pat did his list on SI.com today, and before we go on, because Pat has a ongoing saga with a fan base that in a college town that he has consistently ripped. And, you know, his picture is on the dartboard of the Pullman Chamber of Commerce. And when you talk about the worst jobs in college football, and I'm not going to take Washington State here, but when you talk about worst jobs in college football, Washington State is on the tips of everyone's tongue. And Pat had an opportunity, because there's nothing Pat likes more than to pick on somebody and then to keep picking on them for as long as possible to antagonize the fan bases. And I know Nick Rolovich is not a fan of Pat's feelings on Pullman, but Pat gave Pullman the pass. He did not put Washington State on his bottom 12, which I'm thinking has to be an oversight. I can't, like, peer into Pat Forty's college football brain and see him being like, the Palouse. They are the 13th worst.
The Palouse is terrible. But the football team that was there under Mike Leach was not that bad. They were in contention in the Pac-12 on occasion. Heck, they went to a Rose Bowl this century. I've got all my facts and figures here, Pete, of the last five years of power rankings, and Washington State came out of this in decent order. I mean, at least a good enough order to not be one of my 12 worst. I mean, they aren't by no means good. Sure. Trust me. If I could have had a chance to take one more shot at the miserable, awful, ugly Palouse, I would have.
Fair enough. I was just curious. I was waiting to see it. I was waiting to see what little dig you'd have.
That doesn't mean you can take them. Yeah. You can take them.
I may take them at some point. I'm not going to take them two. Right. I'm going to take Duke two. Duke could just disappear and nobody would notice. Duke football. Are you kidding me? Pat Adam, 8. Oh, I second guessed the heck out of that. 8? There's 8 more relevant programs at Duke football? Like, Daniel Jones was there, and they didn't even get off the table. They couldn't even be resuscitated. The guy was, like, the 5th pick in the draft. I know David Cutcliffe has done a nice job, like, you know, putting a mirror under their nose and drawing some breath. But for the most part, Duke football has been a century of irrelevance.
All right, I'm taking Vanderbilt. They're just too academic. Just, I don't think people care. Their one chance was before the Tennessee Titans showed up. Then they became a pro market. Like, that doesn't help. God bless you for trying, Vandy, but no, that's my first round pick.
Yeah, and that's even with Tennessee in a historic lull, as Sully will note, it hasn't really helped Vanderbilt. I said they were the academic hood ornament of the SEC. Tear the hood ornament off.
That's a great line.
all right, second round. That's three. With the number 4 pick overall, I am taking Rutgers, which I know there was a pilot light of hope that was lit by Greg Schiano. But that still cannot overcome the darkness of the last decade. Now, can Rutgers be good? Yeah, I mean, at least competitive. But just based on what they've done recently and just the fan interest, I think even in good times, the fan interest is going to be iffy. So I'm throwing out Rutgers. You're out.
Just got a commitment from a top 100
quarterback. They did, from the state of Kentucky.
Yeah, how about that? We'll see if it lasts, right. But they got him.
Gavin Winsip from Owensboro. Yeah. What's the name of the barbecue place in Owensboro?
Full Moon Barbecue.
Full Moon Barbecue. It's good.
Are those guys the ones on the barbecue pitmasters all the time?
I don't know.
Somebody from Owensboro probably is on there a lot. They make mutton.
Probably.
They make mutton. Have you ever eaten mutton?
I have not. Now, mutton is big. That is an Owensboro thing, too, especially is mutton. But I have not. Yeah.
Mutton. What is mutton?
It's like a
it's a lamb or something.
Yeah, I thought it was a sheep. Yeah.
What's the difference between a lamb and a sheep?
I think it's the same thing. One's a kid.
All right, back to football.
Good idea. I think it's the same thing.
I don't know. I ain't eating it, though.
We have no idea what we're talking about.
I like lamb. Lamb's one of my favorite foods.
Actually, lamb chop's good. I don't know. Those guys look like they know what they're doing.
Lamb. Like, it's they a Mediterranean delicacy. Yeah.
The Owensboro guys on Barbecue Pitmaster totally know what they're doing. I would eat anything they grill up. All right, go ahead.
I got to take Illinois here. There's different ways you can slice this argument, right? Do you do it by recent history? Do you do it by, like, total history? Do you take market into account? Do you do a lot of things? Illinois did have some glory years at some point when, like, Dick Butkus was there and Jeff George partied his way through there. But for the most part, in the time I've covered the sport, Illinois has just been dead flat irrelevant. And hopefully Brett Bielema can get a little shot of adrenaline there, but I don't think anyone would miss Illinois.
This one's going to pain me a little bit because I was a fan when I was a kid, but the Boston College Eagles, I just don't really see a path forward to anything more than average play. That should be good, I guess, but they care a little about too much about academics. Pete, you can attest there are plenty of Boston College fans, but there's a hell of a lot more Patriots fans out there. Just not really happening for BC. I don't know how they get good in the ACC. It's one of those deals. They moved to the ACC to survive, and that's all they've done. They've survived. They're not really relevant in any way, and their fan base may be angry if you left, but if they showed up at games, that maybe be a little different. So I'll take BC. All right. Yep. Third round.
I saw them on Pat's list. I argue with that a little bit. So I'm going to go Homer on you. First of all, I'm going to the BC spring game this weekend. So I don't want to get pelted with any empty Miller Lite bottles. While I navigate my way through through the parking lot. But I just think with market, like there's better arguments for 12. I would save BC from the 12 here. That would be how I would view it. I don't think they're much past the 12, but I would save them from the 12, and I would purge some of the more irrelevant smaller market teams. They're still
maybe they'll get another 5'9" quarterback from Natick, and then
you might get pelted with full Miller Lite bottles. That would be worse. BC hadn't been in.
Not the BC students I know, Pat. They
they got a lot of money. They can afford to throw a full one at you. BC hasn't finished a season in the top 25 since 2007. So it's been a while. They
did make back-to-back ACC title games.
Yeah, well, that was like 2007. It's been a while.
Yeah, with Matt Ryan. Yeah, no, it's been a while. It's been a while. They were not dudes under Steve Adazio. And yeah, no, they got behind in it.
Yeah.
They just built an indoor. They used to, when Adazio was the coach, they used to have to drive to Bryant College, like if it rained, to practice.
Nice. It's honestly, what a waste of space in that tight little campus that's just a great location to put an indoor practice facility.
No, it's actually pretty nice. I don't know.
I'm sure it's nice.
If you're going to do it, you got to do it, right? Like, they have three sports they have to honor there because hockey is a very big deal, as Dan knows. So, yeah, there's a path forward for them to sort of sputter around and get up to the top 25. No, I've seen it.
Total suck up.
Enjoy the spring game.
Yeah, have
round,
It's supposed to be a nice day.
Round three, first pick. I am taking Oregon State. Oregon's only big enough for one competent team, and Phil Knight has bought that, bought the rights to that. So, Beavers, look, they try hard, but 11 winning seasons in the last 40 years compared to 12 seasons of double-digit losses. Haven't had a winning season since 2013. You got to go. You're out.
So this is going to be counterintuitive because they were recently in the playoff discussion, but I'm going to get rid of Baylor.
Whoa.
They have no market. They're back down again. If you look at the grand scheme of 50 years, they've been terrible for a majority of those 50 years. When they did reach heights under Art Briles, there was obviously a cloud of infamy and just a career destruction that came along with that, along with a bunch of shattered lives. So I don't know, when you look at the who's left on the Big 12, at least like Texas Tech has a little bit more longer history, and they care more at Texas Tech, certainly, than at Baylor. So I'm axing Baylor.
Wow. Nice facilities, great recruiting area. Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man. I guess he just doesn't love the charms of Waco.
Chip and Joanna are off my Christmas list.
Chip and Joanna alone. Maybe I would have said that before when they were at Floyd Casey Stadium and they had those tarps, the tarps with the bodies buried
your
under
favorite
it.
Favorite thing, those tarps.
I'm convinced. What is under the tarp? What are you hiding, Baylor? What's under the tarp? They never answered. They just got rid of the stadium. It's a mystery forever. It's like the freaking Bermuda Triangle, Central Texas. McLean, the sail gating, a lot of players around there. I mean, I don't know. I'll go right at Pete. I'm going to defend you, Baylor, by going right into Pete's, stab Pete right in the heart. Syracuse.
Mm-hmm. They're right here.
All they have is a dome stadium that is aging by the day.
Well, they got a new roof. They redid it in the last year.
Sell that to the recruits. No, hey, we got a new roof. We got a roof.
Yeah.
I mean, once the tannery mills return to Rochester, the population will boom and there'll be a ton of players or something. I mean, Syracuse, forget it, man. Syracuse and BC were relevant programs when all they had to do was play the other crap. Like they played Connecticut and UMass and things like that. Now that they're in real league, there's nothing there. I don't know. I don't know the path forward there for Syracuse. I love dinosaur barbecue. I like it up there in central and western New York, but I just don't see it. Certainly, there's a lot less players hanging around central New York than central Texas, so I'm taking Syracuse Orange. Yeah,
they're certainly on my list. All right, next round. I am taking State.
Last round?
Okay, all right. I'm staying out west. I'm taking Arizona. It's probably a similar premise to the state of Oregon. You're not really going to have two good schools in that state, so one of them gots to go, and it's the one that has been in the Pac-10/12 since the late 1970s and still hasn't gone to the Rose Bowl. Coming off a winless season, they've had more losing seasons than winning seasons this century. You know, they've had some blips of being okay, but that's it. Arizona, out.
Wow. It's tough for Arizona. This week on All-American, Arizona State got a shout-out.
See? Snubbed even on All-American.
I know. It's tough. It's tough.
Every time you reference All-American, I like to just consider how little Pat knows about it, and it makes me chuckle every time. Like, he's never seen a trailer.
Spencer James, 7 touchdowns this week.
7. Good for
Spencer James might as well be Rick James. Like, Pat has no idea.
Could have had 8. Could have had 8, but he could have broken his dad's record, but instead he took a knee. Very emotional. Wow. Very emotional. All right, Pete.
So I think I got to take Wake Forest here. Small market, overshadowed.
Your man is going to be mad.
What?
I'll say this. You kiss up to BC, but then you go right at Wake Forest?
Well, I think Wake Forest is, they were on your list, Pat,
yes,
right?
As was BC.
Yeah. I mean, I had left over Wake Forest, Purdue, Washington State, Arkansas. And you just feel like in terms of relevance in the last 50 years, Wake Forest would be the least relevant of those four. If only we keep Arkansas for the potential of another coach motorcycle crash.
I will say Wake, even like 2 years ago, 2019, when they were 8-5, they still averaged less than, I think it was 27,000 fans per game. That's pretty bad.
Smallest stadium in D1, right? Or in the power?
Could be. Might be the smallest enrollment, too.
Yes, I think they do have smallest enrollment. And one of the smallest, if not the smallest, stadiums.
All right, I get the last pick, and I'll be willing to hear debate on this, but I'm going to go with Cal. Cal has no excuse. Cal should be great. Cal's great at everything other than football. Cal has got location. It's got campus. It's got academics, but it's big enough to kind of slip some guys in the, you know, some kind of major undecideds. Cal, it's got recruiting turf. Cal should be great. Cal isn't great. Cal's never great. They had Aaron Rodgers. They weren't even that good.
Pretty good.
They had beast mode. They were pretty good then. I don't think the fans care. I don't think the alumni care. I think the campus would take, they would take the stadium, use it for something else. I don't think anybody cares. I'm taking Cal.
And
what's the name of the hill on at Cal where everybody goes and smokes weed?
Cheapskate Hill.
Cheapskate Hill.
Cheapskate Hill.
Tightwad Hill. Tightwad Hill.
Tightwad Hill. Tightwad Hill.
Same damn thing.
Tightwad Hill. You can look
Miser
in.
Miser Hill. Spendrift Hill.
Used to be where they go to smoke joints right. while watching the game, and now you can just do it right. in the stadium. So yeah. Even that doesn't attract
yeah,
people.
Yeah, no, that, I mean, they are absolutely awash in apathy. There's no doubt about that. And a small budget. I can't completely dispute that. I would take Maryland before Cal. I would take Arkansas. I would take Texas Tech, Purdue. All before Cal, and I would probably even consider Colorado and other places full of apathy, but they won a national title within the last 31 years now. And South Carolina's been bad, but boy, the fans show up, so you got to give them credit for that.
They show up at Arkansas.
Arkansas, they're bad.
Mm.
If it wasn't for that doomed Hardly ride, they'd be great right now.
That was a decade ago, man, and they're still bad.
I would just hate to do that to Sam Pittman, you know, relegated.
Yeah. How bad was it with Chad Morris? The fact that, like, people are looking at Sam Pittman like he's Bear Bryant. He was 3-7 last year. But that's how bad it was before 3-7.
Well, I'll tell you, a school that avoided it, and I think they've got a little market cornered here. I don't know if you've heard about this. West Virginia. This could also apply to Marshall. Okay, no one wants to kick West Virginia out. But West Virginia, the state of West Virginia, has a new policy they've come up with. You can get, the state of West Virginia will give you $12,000 and a year-long pass to its state parks. I found funny. We'll kick in a free park pass if you move to West Virginia.
Really?
You get 12 grand if you move to West Virginia. They're trying to get people to move to West Virginia and telecommute or work remotely or whatever.
Is this a Groupon or was this actually through the legislature?
I think they're using Groupon. This is why it's still West Virginia. Even the legislatures, you know. There's a reason that 50 years ago, John Denver coined West Virginia almost heaven in his hit song, Take Me Home Country Roads. And we'd like to share it with you.
It's about the Western. That's not even about the West Virginia. It's about the Western part of Virginia. That's not even.
Well, that's a heavily disputed notion now.
Because they don't have much in that state.
But there's a huge debate over that. And you will. I just like to tell you, Sully, watch what you're doing right now. Watch yourself. Yeah. Their mascot has a gun. Somebody from West Virginia will shoot your ass just for even bringing it up.
They ripped Davy Crockett from the. They also ripped Davy Crockett. So there's two things: the song and the mascot. They're just ripping everything in West Virginia.
They routinely win the NCAA rifling championship. They beat the Army in it.
Yeah,
that's
pretty good.
Army. Watch I'll yourself, Sully. Watch yourself.
You don't want them coming after you.
12 grand to move to West Virginia. A, are any of you doing it? And B, could this be an illegal? Does the NCAA know about this? They're going to flip out.
That's, you know, like if you live in like Ashland, Kentucky, and all you got to do is move across the Big Sandy River for 12 grand and the park pass. You know, I might take it under consideration. Move to Huntington. And especially like,
you think this brings Pac-Man Jones back?
This isn't like the Upper East Side of Manhattan where 12 grand gets you like dinner.
No, I get 12 grand goes further in West Virginia than just about anywhere else, but you still are in West Virginia. That's the tax. You are living in West Virginia. But
it's beautiful.
The park pass, like if you're really kind of up against it, the park pass, you can go fish for, you can buy your dinner, you could live off the land for a while, you know?
Got to bring up fishing, doesn't he? Got to pick that stat.
When we organize a big West Virginia fishing trip, you'll be the first invitee.
We'll bring you the Greenbrier.
There you go.
Yeah. There are similar programs in Vermont. You get 10 grand to move to Vermont.
Wow.
And then local ones, Northwest Arkansas has one. Is this what Sam Pittman is up to? Savannah, Georgia, Tucson, Arizona, and Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Really? Huh.
Yeah, they will pay you to move there. Funny, none of those places other than Tucson really booming. Savannah is kind of.
Northwest Arkansas has had some boom with Walmart and all that business, but I don't know whether that's still ongoing.
12 G's to move to West Virginia. Should they utilize this? I don't know that really a college athlete would qualify, but I'm sure that can be overlooked on this Ascend West Virginia website.
Well, I mean, why not try? I would at least throw it out there, especially, you know, to some of the more, shall we say, interested families that tend to follow their children where they go to college. Those that have pro potential, especially.
Mm. Yeah, if I was some, JUCO defensive end who is about to enroll at West Virginia in June, you know I'm logging on and giving it a shot, right? Like, just put your occupation as, like, sack master.
I mean, if the West Virginia government says you qualify, well, who's the NCAA to overrule that?
Talk to the government.
There you go. Jig.
And if they got caught, they wouldn't rule on it till like 2029 anyway. So, like, you know, I think it's worth the risk. You invest that 12 grand in like Apple stock, you'd be rolling by then.
I mean, Brian Bowen Sr. got offered a house to move to Stillwater, and then he ended up moving into the Galt House in downtown Louisville. For Brian's junior, he should have just gone to West Virginia. It all would have been good. He could have been walking around some mountain park and living. No need for little secret cash deals at the gas station.
There have been a lot of economic incentives, air quotes, over the years to move places if your kid is good enough in sports.
Where was Zion's? Didn't Zion's?
Moved into that nice neighborhood in Durham. Yeah, sure did.
Yeah, so nothing new. West Virginia's just catching up. All right. Speaking of NCAA crime and punishment, I'm personally humiliated as a UTEP fan right now. The Miners are on probation. The UTEP Miners were cheating. I don't even know what to say. First, they put the softball team on for different stuff, and then football. The defensive and offensive quality control specialists for UTEP provided skill instruction during practice, and that exceeded the number of allowable coaches for 2 years. And so UTEP is now on probation. Now, I'd just like to note the last, I'm going to read off the win totals of recent UTEP seasons. 3-1-1-0. Exactly how much instruction was getting done here? Does the NCAA really need to punish UTEP for having too much coaching?
Think how bad those players would be without that quality control coaching.
What? How are you a quality control specialist when you won 2 games in 3 years?
There's no quality to control.
Jesus.
Now,
this is humiliating.
See, Dan, so you should be ashamed as a UTEP fan, but not because of committing the violations, but because it led to nothing. You're not getting much bang for your cheating.
We got probation.
Buck.
We got 2 wins. So win some games, man. I don't care. UTEP goes 12-0. Catch them. They're cheating. Believe me. Well, what the hell? How the heck are you cheating?
Like, who's really going to?
I don't know. This is what I was Kansas still floating around out there
because Kansas has admitted nothing. UTEP. I actually looked at the report. It was one of those where like UTEP's like, yeah, you got us. And I figure, you know, somebody.
Well, they probably have hours and person. Hours of they practice don't have a film that showed the coaches coaching, right? Like it's hard to like and can't burn all the tape.
I figure this is one of those things where like, you know, that somebody came after him for softball and softball's like, oh, yeah, well, you see what's going on over at football? And they're like, no, oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Well, now we got to own up to both of them.
Okay, they got a 1 year probation. This one's my favorite part. They got fined $5,000.
The $5,000 fine, like, what actually is that? Where does that money go? What does that do?
Why? Ah, $5,000. Looks like there goes Taco Tuesday at the training table. $5,000 is the entire fine for a university?
Where does that, it's, I want to know, where does, what does the money come out of? Probably, like you said, Taco Tuesday at the training table. And then where does it go at the NCAA? Does it go into the...
Oh, Christmas party.
Right, Christmas party, they're for sure.
The whole staff gets drunk at the Slippery Noodle Inn, downtown Indianapolis, on the, and they sit around. It's UTEP night. It's UTEP.
They all wear UTEP gear to the bar.
Miners!
Another round on the Miners!
UTEP night at the Slippery Noodle.
Oh, my gosh.
Let's take the glory road to the Slippery Noodle for why free Tito's and sodas.
$5,000 fine. What is this?
Now, that's that. Most of the penalties have a $5,000 fine in there, and now we know why.
I don't think that's the deterrent.
No, it's not. But that, yeah, so you got the holiday party from UTEP, and then who else just got a $5,000 fine? Who else just got penalized for something? Oh, Youngstown State. That $5,000 goes to the spring retreat, you know? That's, you get $5,000 here, $5,000 there.
I'm stunned. President Jim Tressel wasn't, and Bo Pelini got together and didn't monitor.
I can't believe it. Who could have foreseen it?
This is... unbelievable.
My favorite part was I saw that headline somewhere in the Nebraska media, because they're the only people that still care about Bo Pelini. So they were publicizing Bo Pelini's latest setback.
Still so much bitterness at Nebraska about Bo Pelini.
Well, they're still paying him, right?
Yeah, well, he could pay the fine.
He was a $2 million defensive coordinator at LSU.
That went well.
And did he have a three-year deal? I think he had a three-year deal. Really?
I know this in the single word assessment of our Cajun fishing guide, sorry, Dan, but on Sunday when I, Saturday, Sunday morning, when I asked him while we were out, I was like, so how, what was it like watching it last year with Pelini's defense? Horrible. This is it.
How big of a legend is Coach O down there? Are they already turning on him?
No, he's big. No, that, down in Cajun country, they're definitely not turning on him. You drive through La Rose, his hometown, on the way down to Golden Meadow where we were. Those are his people. Oh. And yeah, no, it's all, we just got to get Coach O the right support. We got the players. He know what he doing. He motivate them. You know.
Did you enjoy that fishing trip, Pat?
All right. Do we really have to discuss this again?
Best time of my life. Best time ever.
I hate you both. I'm going to fine you both $5,000. Pete, you had a really good story this week about the retirement of Alex Smith, who is probably best known for his NFL former number one pick. Guy's had quite a career. He was quarterback for Reggie Bush in high school. Ends up being the number one pick in the draft, although he only goes to Utah. He only gets in because another guy broke his wrist or something. Happens to Utah when Utah is not in the Pac-12, Urban Meyer shows up, helps turn him into the number one pick, has this very interesting, good career, obviously a heroic comeback in Washington. He retires. You kind of went down that college route with him, and you called him one of the most influential players of the last, I don't know, tell us what, how'd you phrase it?
So I wrote the column that basically said, look, he was not the best quarterback this century, this generation, whatever. But since 2000, which is Pat and I both first started covering national college football in 2004, right, Pat? We were on the beat together then, our first year. So that was this season, this sort of season of Alex Smith. And, you know, so I feel like I can speak enough to college football since 2000. Past that, you know, I was in college and didn't follow it as closely. But I would think, in that time since 2000, you can make an argument that Alex Smith is one of the most important players in the sport. Are there others you can make that argument for? Sure. Alex is not the best quarterback we've seen in the last 20 years in college football. There's probably 10, 15 better, right? But he went 21-1 as a starter. He's only lost to New Mexico, by the way. But it was a twofold legacy story. One is he basically took Utah from being a run-of-the-mill Mountain West program. Maybe they were like a little better, like they would have been one of the better jobs in the Mountain West. And he put them in, you know, the end of that season, number four in the country or number three in the country. They were the top five by the end of the season. And
came in sixth in the BCS.
Undefeated. Undefeated.
Yes. Yep, they were undefeated and really untested. That no one was within 15 points of them. They played four Power Five teams that year, and I'm only going to bring up the four because it was fun to remember who the coaches were. They beat Mike Stoops' Arizona team, Carl Torbush's North Carolina team. They beat Dennis Franchione's Texas A&M team, and the immortal Walt Harris's final game at Pitt. They won those games by an average of three touchdowns. But that offense was so far ahead of where college football was. So the same season, Bowling Green went 9-3. Urban Meyer's OC, Greg Brandon, took the BG job when he left. They had a quarterback named Omar Jacobs, who was a statue, big physical freak, Cam Newton-ish body type kind of guy. Omar Jacobs had 41 touchdown passes and four interceptions. Now, in 2004, that is like jaw hit the ground, 41 touchdowns. Look, Mike Leach comes along and the air raid comes and guys throw 40 touchdowns a season. Now, that did not happen in college football then. And look, Alex Smith was a very good athlete, but at the time, the offense was so far ahead in the way he was so smart, the way he read things. And he was obviously an excellent passer. He became a very good NFL quarterback. I think he won 199 games in the NFL. So like that's, pretty good, right? I really just think like what's a little bit lost, and then I went down the rabbit hole, I called Mullen and I called Meyer and I called a bunch of people who were around then, was just like teams had no idea what to do against them. I remember that year at the Heisman ceremony in New York, I was sitting around the lobby at the Hilton with Urban and some like high school coaches from New Jersey. He's doing a little like recruiting shtick because they had a player he wanted. He had got the Florida job at this point. And he said, empty your wallet, empty your 401k, and put every dime you own on the Utes. He goes, Pitt has no chance to stop us. I was kind of like, oh, now I didn't obviously bet. And he wasn't obviously trying to get us to bet. But he was just like that outlandishly confident. And I mean, they blew Pitt. Pitt wasn't in that game for a snap. They just completely blew them out of the water. And he basically said the way they did things, Pitt's linebackers were too big and slow and wouldn't be able to handle like the reads and the pitches. And they would just get mismatches all day. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
So, and then Walt Harris went to Stanford. I'm sure you remember that family fact.
No, it's so.
Anyway, it was a walk down memory lane. Alex was a really interesting guy. I know Pat covered him some there too, but it was a fun time to kind of rekindle the last
great
few days.
Story. And it does. I think your point is 100% correct that in terms of impact, timing, fantastic influence on things as they were to come in college football. The first game I covered as a national reporter for ESPN after coming from the Louisville Courier Journal was that game against Texas A&M on a Thursday night to open the season. And you watched that, and it was 100% chess versus checkers. And they just schemed them and executed them to death. And you walked out of there like, holy cow, Utah is good. Wow, Alex Smith is good. And then the season just kept playing out that way. And if you think about it, the harmonic convergence of Alex Smith and Urban Meyer sent them both on to great things. The symbiotic relationship that helps them both. That was the thing there. And yes, just exploded the spread offense concept throughout college football from there.
Now, this was prime. We were working on Death to the BCS. We actually weren't writing it then, but Josh Peter and I, who's at USA Today now, is at Yahoo. We were trying to figure out how the whole system worked, and we were going through everything from tax records to the Harris poll and all that. And this team
the
was
Harris
one
poll.
Really,
oh my God. Yeah,
remember the Harris poll?
What a disaster.
There's some dude in like a hut in Idaho is like voting in the Harris poll.
Well, I got a good story on this because the AP dropped right. out. They were like, you can't use our poll anymore. So it's the coaches' poll, and they assembled this expert Harris poll. So Utah that year did not, the closest game the entire season was a 14-point victory against Air Force. They destroyed teams. They're winning. They destroyed everybody. They had Alex Smith and Urban Meyer and Dan Mullen. And I mean, this is a new offense that no one could cover. This is fascinating. And this is why you want to play off. Now, look, USC won the national title that year, destroyed Oklahoma in the title game. They had Reggie Bush. They probably would have won it anyway. But this is where the playoff would have been
absolutely
fascinating, because Utah would have had their shot. And boy, they could have sprung an upset. 100%. They would have made the Final Four or something. And this could have been amazing. And what happened was they destroyed Pittsburgh in that game at the Fiesta Bowl. And so Josh, Peter, and I decide, let's call Harris Poll voters and ask them what they think. And so we get the list and we start making phone calls. And literally 20 minutes later, Josh calls me and he goes, I've talked to three, and I had talked to one. I had found one that had answered his phone at that time or gotten a hold of. All four guys, we asked them, what do you think of Pittsburgh? I mean, what do you think of Utah? Like, wow, that was incredible last night. And all four of them said, that's the first time I've seen him play this year.
That's unbelievable.
No joke. We said, what? And we had their names in the book and stuff. I mean, we're literally like, screw it, right? We ran them on Yahoo. What kind of system is it that you never even watched an undefeated team? And I'm not talking about random fan who's like, they got around to staying up late. Your job, quote unquote, but you signed up to be a Harris voter. And you're like, well, Utah couldn't be good. They're Utah. And it's like, this is how stupid this system is. Like, man, I don't know. I would have loved to seen Utah play USC.
Sure.
Not saying they would have won, but they sure as hell could have gotten there as something big. They could have played Oklahoma. They could have, like, it would have been fascinating. I was like, this system sucks so bad. These guys didn't even get watched by the key people who have been deemed the experts who should determine this.
That's beautiful. That's great.
No matter how much we kick and scream about the four-team playoff now, it was so much worse.
When people say, bring back the old system, I go, nope, those voters sucked. At least the playoff committee would have watched them and said no.
Right. At least.
But at least they would have watched them. But honestly, that team was awesome. And yeah, they had a 15-year NFL quarterback. And one of the two of the best coaches, literally one of the top two coaches of this era, three coaches. And as their offensive coordinator, an excellent coach and all sorts of talent on that team. So
Mullen was actually the quarterback coach because it's my job to be the nerdy football guy. Okay. It was Mike Sanford's dad who went on to UNLV.
Was the OC.
Was the OC. But Mullen behind the scenes got a lot of credit for sort of being the creative whiz around then, which makes sense because he's one of the five best.
And was Urban calling plays at that point?
No, Urban's never called a play. Like, he's never been the play caller. Because remember, he was the wide receiver coach at Notre Dame before he went to Bowling Green, where he was hired by Paul Krebs, who ended up at New Mexico, ended up going in the clink for a golf junket. Remember that one, Dan?
College sports, baby.
Yes, college sports. You can make probably one of the most inspired hires of the generation. Urban at Bowling Green, like, you know, you pluck a pretty anonymous position coach from Notre Dame, and he ends up leading you to glory for 2 years there in the MAC. Although they never did win the MAC, but they went at Missouri, right?
They did. They end up winning 10 games the second year.
Yeah, they were good. They were definitely good. But yeah, then the guy goes to New Mexico. It was like a Scottish golf junk classic, you know, made the Orange Bowl cruise look above board.
All right, let's get to this. You could deem this chicken war has gone bad if you want. This story, I don't even know where to start. So Mars, we're interested. NASA and astronauts are trying to get to Mars. We've had the movie Martian. You see that movie? Matt Damon. That's the most ridiculous movie of all time. Matt Damon is floating through space and they somehow catch him with their arms or something. Like, what? I mean, come on.
Absolute cinema verite. Very realistic. No doubt.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, they're talking about Mars, but what would happen if you're in Mars and you do get stranded or things start going bad? And this is an actual story from IGN.com. Should astronauts exploring Mars eat the corpses of their crew members in a last-ditch effort to survive? If you're on Mars and someone else dies and you need the food, should you eat them? No, so space.
We're talking about cannibalism on the pod, like we were joking about in the text thread.
No space agency has an official policy on cannibalism.
What happens in space stays in space. Yes, you eat them if it's a choice between living or not. Come on.
That just jumps right in. I was going to quote Emory University bioethicist Paul Warp.
Okay, sorry. I don't mean to preempt you.
But that's a fine. You agree with Paul, but you a little more enthusiastically, I might note. There are two kinds of approaches to it. One says, even though we owe the body enormous amount of respect, life is primary. And if the only way one could possibly survive would be to eat a body, it's acceptable but not desirable. Acceptable but not desirable is cannibalism on Mars. This is an actual story. This is like they're actually discussing this.
What?
Paul Warp says that people have committed suicide to save others and other things. In fact, religiously, that's totally acceptable. I don't know why this guy makes the rules. Here's a quote. We can't draw straws to see who we're going to kill to eat. Why not? But there are many times when we've considered people heroes who jump on a grenade to save their buddies. This guy's out there, man. This guy's like that rodent expert.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that guy?
Absolutely remember him.
This is what he spends his time thinking about. If stuck on Mars, would you eat somebody? I guess, well, yes. Yeah.
Pat said hell yes, I believe, would have been his quote.
I mean, yeah. You know,
pass the barbecue.
If the
sauce,
alternative is the said. Alternative, then yeah, sorry. I mean, I'm not saying, yeah, I'm not certain you're relishing the meal, but, you know, assuming you're not pulling off the Matt Damon harvest potatoes on Mars crap in that movie, then, you know, that's it. I mean, I go to the Alfred Packer playbook, the guy that known as the Colorado cannibal, who in like he's stranded in the winter of 1874 with a bunch of frozen people and he had to eat them to survive. So you do what you got to do.
Pete?
I would reluctantly survive, but it would be with a lot of reluctance. A lot of reluctance. What would be our rules within the pod if we were stranded somewhere?
I think I'd just kill myself. I'm really not interested in eating another person.
I mean, you know.
I feel like that, not only would that meal, like, I don't know. You have to know how to prepare the meat, first off. Like, I know how to cook a chicken. I don't know what the proper temperature is. I probably don't have a thermometer. The rest of my life, that
do you have an air fryer,
let's think. Let's try to think in terms of Mars here, where it's going to be really cold.
Do I have the Trevor Lawrence toaster? Like, how do I do this? I don't.
The glass toaster. You can see your filet of pat inside the glass toaster.
I'm going to try to find a cliff in Mars to jump off of. If you actually, but then there's no gravity there. Do you even go down?
I don't know. I think there is gravity there, but that would be a bet. You know, that's the risk of trying to. Yeah, you know, trying to jump to your death someplace. Like Jupiter has crushing gravity, I think. You'd die very quickly jumping from high heights there, if there is such a thing.
Well, then I'm not going to Mars. Let me just put it that way.
That's probably the best way to short-circuit this hypothetical, you know?
If asked, I will not serve.
I do not intend to go to Mars and eat people. Okay.
Let's talk about the chicken war. Enough about us. We had a chicken war.
Yeah.
Vibrant, raging chicken war.
McDonald's is upping its fight. All our listeners in Sacramento, please let us know what's up. They're starting a new chicken breakfast sandwich. I have tried their regular chicken sandwich. Meh. Not as good. Not as good as Popeyes or Chick-fil-A. It's okay. But they're trying this, and they're calling it breakfast. It's a fried chicken fillet topped with applewood smoked bacon and honey sauce between a biscuit or an English muffin. Is that really breakfast?
Yeah. I mean, if you're hungover, that's gonna get you through the morning, right?
I mean, I'm fine with it. It's like when they extended their breakfast menu. I hated the arrogance of McDonald's telling me what time I should eat.
Yeah,
breakfast.
The all day breakfast. Yeah, we back it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, who are you to say 11 a.m. is the cutoff?
In previous pod iterations, we did a bit on that, I remember. And that, yes, Dan Wetzel, yeah. Libertarian, was strongly in favor of eating breakfast when he wants to eat breakfast.
Most people at McDonald's are hungover or drunk. So why? But yeah, so they're calling this it seems like they just took the regular sandwich pretty much. Anyway, thoughts on the breakfast wars? We're going chicken breakfast.
I mean, it's
wars
the next
now.
Frontier. You know, this is again an ever expanding war. It's now war on three fronts: breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And so I am not surprised that we've spilled over to this point. There's no containing this conflict, none, and no end in sight. This is like, you know, the Afghanistan war, where it just never ends. But I think it's a strong play by McDonald's. Obviously, they've got the reach. They've got the marketing power. I don't know whether the sandwich is going to be any good, but more breakfast chicken is not a bad thing. I will say the the breakfast chicken biscuit and strips in from Popeyes are going to be dang tough to beat. But we'll see how this entry goes.
I can't see how this is a bad thing.
Never start a war on three fronts, right? That could be a bad thing. Chick-fil-A has already dominated the chicken breakfast for years. So
my guess is they're not selling as many chicken sandwiches as they thought. So they've got them laying around and they're just going to.
It's like a multi-billion dollar business with like hundreds of thousands of locations. And Dan's just like, yeah, we got these laying around at all our locations that serves billions of people. Let's just get a few biscuits.
We got inventory. We might as well use it.
Yeah. My skepticism would lie in the Applewood smoked bacon.
Is it really Applewood?
Yeah.
Is it really Applewood?
That's going to be a lot of Applewood to get that bacon tasting that way. Like,
that's
for
a good point.
It's very good point. So, been the trend for, I don't know, 15 years in food now, is you always have to put a modifier before. You can't just call it bacon now. It's got to be Applewood smoked bacon. But is it really?
Right. Maple glazed. Right. Yeah. Is there really? That's a lot of apple trees to go down.
Yeah.
Yes. And really, I mean, that's a faint taste. That's a very high end thing. I don't believe it. I don't believe it. All right. That's our pod. That's got to be our pod. We're down to breakfast and cannibalism. We'll be back next week. Big NFL draft week. Feel the excitement. We'll talk a lot of NFL draft next week. Please subscribe.